Welcome to Public Health Matters with Dr. Christina M. Madison, the founder and CEO of the Public Health Pharmacist, PLLC, a public health consulting firm. She is passionate about spreading knowledge on public health in order to create healthier and happier communities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Public Health Matters with me, your host, Dr. Christina Madison, also known as the Public Health Pharmacist. I have an incredible guest with me today, Jocelyn Hatfield. She goes by she, her, and hers pronouns. Just want to put that out there because this episode is all about pride. And how I know this beautiful soul is because we worked together at the university that I teach for. And then she got an amazing opportunity to lead and be the editor of Las Vegas Pride magazine. So I would love to get Jocelyn to tell us a little bit about her journey as well as what you've been up to for Pride Month, because you have been doing some amazing things, not to mention the fact that you were just voted top 40 under 40 for Las Vegas weekly magazine. So just want to acknowledge and affirm that as well, because you were doing incredible things. So with that, my love, tell us about you.
Well, hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and talk about Pride Month. Again, Jocelyn Hatfield, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm currently the vice president of Las Vegas Pride and the editor of Las Vegas Pride magazine. And in my daytime, I work at the College of Southern Nevada for the office of the president. So I'm a busy gal and I have a lot of opportunity to impact the LGBTQ plus pride movement in a variety of different facets of my life. And it's really an honor. How I got started in pride. I actually came out a little bit later in life. So I would be what you would call a late bloomer lesbian. And I didn't come out until I was like 30.
God, I love that so much.
Yeah.
I did not know that. So yes, I coined that term, late bloomer lesbian.
Yes, yes. It's a thing. It's definitely a thing. But when I came out, I was living in San Diego, California. And I just kind of wanted to immerse myself in the LGBTQ community. I started doing some volunteer work with San Diego Pride. A friend of mine at the time was really involved with managing the community partners for San Diego Pride, and she recruited me to get involved with that. From there, I volunteered to be an organizer for their women's focused event, SheFest, and I was on that committee for a couple of years and was really instrumental in getting that event up on its feet and off the ground. And from there, I was pretty much hooked in the Pride work and advocacy, and specifically planning Pride festivals and events for our community. When I moved to Las Vegas, I got involved with the center here and with Vegas Women's Fest, which is a women's focused event that they used to have annually. And then I got involved during the pandemic in an event called Squad Festival, which was a spectrum of queer, united, and diverse. And that was a virtual festival that I helped organize with a whole bunch of different queer community organizers who just really felt that during the pandemic and during isolation that we all really needed an opportunity to connect with our community and find some of that warmth and love that we were missing while we were all in isolation. And then I joined the Las Vegas Pride Board. I wanted to impact the community locally here. And then later I joined the executive board and became the editor of the magazine. So that's kind of my snapshot of how I ended up where I am. All of my work with Pride thus far has been in a volunteer capacity. It's something that I'm really passionate about. And I just really believe in giving back to my community and advocating for my community. And I think that to really truly have community, you have to build it with your own hands. And that's kind of my philosophy. That's what I like doing.
Well, thank you so much for that, Jocelyn. And it's funny, when you were just talking about Squad Fest, I totally forgot that I did that too.
You did, I know.
I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, so like, that's the one thing too that I absolutely adore about you is that, you know, obviously when we think about the community, like the first thing is inclusion, and then obviously making sure that we make a comfortable space, a space for people to be their authentic selves, be able to share their lived experiences. But like, what I love about you is that you think about the health aspect, because you've been involved in allied health professional education institutions. And so like, that's the one thing I really appreciate, that like, you always bring in that like health piece. So like, obviously I did Squad, but then this year you asked me to come and talk with Cappy, right?
Cappy, yep. Cappy.
So sorry if I messed up the abbreviation.
No, it's great. Yeah, it's perfect.
So as you were talking and saying like that you like to be involved with Pride organizing, it's, I think that's another thing that people don't really realize, is that there's this whole community of people who get together to talk about how to do Pride well. So
that's right. Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. And I guess the other thing to point out there is that public health and community health is such a huge component of what Pride organizers do. So we focus a lot of our intention and a lot of our programming development on making sure that our content and the things that we're offering at our festivals and events is what our community needs and wants. But sometimes what our community doesn't necessarily know that they need is a health focus, right? And so it's especially during the pandemic, it became really clear that for as Pride organizers, we really had an obligation to our communities to educate ourselves on public health, educate ourselves on how to keep our community safe when we're bringing folks together. And that was, there was a bit of a learning curve there, I'm not gonna lie, for Pride organizers, but I think through collaboration through folks like you, public health advocates, and then also, you know, anyone who is in higher education or health science education really helped out a lot during that time to bring us up to speed. So I have to thank you for that, because I know that my experience working with you at Roseman University was really instrumental in helping me kind of turn the corner as an event organizer and know like, no, this is definitely something that we need to focus on. And it's an imperative as a Pride organizer. It's not optional. It's not, you know, it's something that we really need to be focused on. And I think at the CAPI conference, which Las Vegas Pride hosted in, I think, early March of this year, that was a big topic of conversation. How do we keep our communities safe? How do we balance the needs for, you know, choice and individuality, but still keep our community safe and do the things that are in the best interest of the broader community, particularly when you consider that many in our community are already immunocompromised, we're at risk for a whole host of different health concerns. So it really was something that we had to assess and learn about very quickly.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that you said that, because I just did a talk for the state specifically on meeting the vaccination needs of the LGBTQ community for Pride Month. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was, you know, part of the conversation was talking about the health disparities and inequities that are already an issue within the LGBTQ community. And obviously one of the biggest ones is issues around sexual health and HIV. And so when you're thinking about as an organizer for Pride and bringing people together, you know, taking into that consideration that you may have a whole subset of people who are attending that may be at a higher risk for contracting COVID or having serious complications associated with COVID, and making sure that they feel safe so that when they leave the house and they want to gather and they want to commune and live in their joy, they're doing it safely, and that you're offering things like masks and, you know, test kits and partnering with your local health department offering vaccinations at your events, offering free testing, you know, so it's funny because, you know, going back to like my roots, which is in HIV care, mm-hmm. I see a lot of parallels between this pandemic and the HIV epidemic, and the same stigma, discrimination, blame, shame that you saw with the beginning of the HIV epidemic, and in particular, its impact in the queer community, mm-hmm. In particular in the gay community, because it was at one point called the gay plague. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of like mistrust of the government. Obviously there's a lot of historical trauma based on that with, you know, obviously we're celebrating Pride when we think about police brutality and Stonewall and all the things, right?
So right.
We have to take all of that into consideration when we're offering help, because sometimes the help that you're offering is coming from a messenger that we don't want to listen to. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you get reflective messaging when you're not including people from the community to provide those services?
Exactly right. Yeah. And I think that at least for our community, one of the things that we as Pride organizers have really tried to focus on are, and I, you know, I'm not a medical professional, but I think it's kind of the outcomes, right? Like, what are the outcomes that we're looking for, and really focus in on the fact that we're really trying to keep people safe, and that we are sensitive to and understand those historical traumas and kind of that history for our community that centers around everything from, you know, general public policy to public health policy as well. So those are definitely factors that we have to consider, and that are kind of top of our mind, or in the back of our mind at least, always.
Fantastic. So obviously the magazine is like fantastic. Like, you guys have amazing content, and you sponsor a lot of really important events around town. But I'm wondering, you know, with what you're producing, you know, is there a focus on, you know, including health-related articles or features, or what are some of the things that you've featured in the past, or some of the things that you've included in the magazine that you feel like have been really helpful for the community?
Well, thank you for asking, actually. So for Las Vegas Pride Magazine, health and wellness is one of our editorial pillars, believe it or not. So in the magazine, we really try to include health-related content that is applicable for our community. So that's everything from, you know, infectious disease control and sexual health to fertility and mental health. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of ground there, a lot of rich content ready to be, you know, developed, I think, because our community does have a lot of health risks. And so we try to make sure that we're covering those and understanding emerging trends for each of those kind of emerging health risks for our community, because it does change. Some of them are going to be pretty standard, right? So we know that HIV and AIDS are a huge concern for our community, unfortunately. But, you know, as things come up, like COVID or like fertility and family planning, things like that, we try to kind of keep our finger on the pulse of those, because really Las Vegas Pride Magazine is about being a community resource for the LGBTQ community, and our content strategy kind of reflects that.
Yeah, that's great. So I love that you talked about the fertility aspect. So it's really interesting. I had done an interview with a colleague of mine who also identifies in the community and has a husband, mm-hmm. and is like just an amazing breath of fresh air. And one of the things that he was talking about was sort of, you know, the assault and the attack that we've seen on the queer community with mm-hmm. new laws, and in particular trans youth, and then the, you know, obviously the Don't Say Gay bill and all the things, right? So the thing that I thought was really interesting that he was talking about was, you know, because he works with children, he's a pediatrician by practice, that like not being able to talk with your students if you're a teacher about mm-hmm. your child, the child that's in your classroom's family. So if you have two moms, or if you have two dads, or if you have someone who is non-binary or gender non-conforming, or part of our gender expansive community and maybe don't, you know, identify as either, you know, however it is, but you still want to have biological children. It's like, how do you start that conversation? Or if you've already had biological children from a previous relationship, it's like, some people are like, but wait, like you're with a woman now, but like you have a child. Like, I just think it's really interesting, first of all, that these conversations, that people feel comfortable enough to ask these kinds of questions, because it's rude and it's a microaggression.
Sure.
It's like, if you have questions, ask me a question, don't assume. So there's that. But then also wanting to make sure that people feel comfortable talking about fertility and planning a family, because for so long, the queer community has been marginalized, demonized, and basically told, no, you're a deviant and you shouldn't be having children. And your idea of a family, you shouldn't be thinking that way. And
sure. So
I love that you guys are making that part of the conversation, because I really do think that it's something that I talk a lot about with my individuals of trans experience, because if you're trying to transition and you still want to have biological children, I need to have a conversation with you about, do we need to freeze your eggs? Do we need to do sperm donation? Like, before you decide to do sex reassignment surgery, like, all, you know, these are conversations that we should be having and should not be omitting from care.
Right.
Based on your sexual orientation.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, one thing that comes to mind listening to you talk about that is, it's a fairly recent phenomenon that many in the LGBTQ community have even really let themselves entertain the idea of having families. So even my partner, who's a part of Gen X, right, she has shared with me that for much of her life, she didn't even consider it a possibility to get either married or have a family. You know, and that's someone who's roughly my age, you know, and it's within a generation that this has even become really and truly the standard and a viable option for many in the community. So I think there's, you know, that's part of it. That's an aspect of it. And then, as you were saying, I mean, it's just, there are a lot of complex medical, I don't want to say concerns, because I don't think that that's necessarily the right word, but there's a lot of aspects, I guess, to family planning. And that's why I think it's so important to have competent clinicians, people who are educated and, you know, empathetic and know how to interact with our community, know what's important to us, and know what our concerns are. I think that's extremely important.
So kind of in that same vein, obviously you identify in the community, you advocate for the community, you know, as this sort of pillar for the community, what would you say are things that me as a healthcare professional, i.e. a pharmacist and or other health professionals, what is the main thing that you would like for us to know, especially people who don't work in this space all the time?
That's tough. You know, it's tough to advocate for an entire community, because there's a lot of parts of the community, say like trans folks, I'm not trans, so I can't really speak to their experiences. But what I can say for myself is I think healthcare providers can do a lot and go a long way by just really listening to their patients and having conversations. And I think that there is definitely a tendency, I come from a family of physicians, so I know that even in my own family that there's a tendency to kind of assume that they know more, or that their education has covered, you know, has prepared them for some of these conversations, right? And I don't know that that's necessarily always the case. Sometimes it is, and that's great when it is, you know. But I think just listening, and I don't think that's any different than any other aspect of your patient care, right? Like, listen to your patients and help guide them. I think a lot of times folks whether they're dealing with gender identity or sexual orientation or any other aspect of their health, just really are kind of looking for that counsel and that kind of collaborative approach with their clinicians. So just kind of stick to that, which I think is naturally a part of maybe with what most clinicians do. A lot of people kind of refer to it as like the bedside manner or whatnot. And I think just incorporate into that a kindness and a willingness to embrace. I think also it goes a long way to acknowledge what you don't know and what you're still bringing yourself up to speed on. As humans, I think you can relate to that. So if I were to see a doctor who wasn't necessarily up to speed on gender identity or maybe some of the health concerns for lesbians, I would give a lot more grace if there was some kind of acknowledgement that was like, I'm coming up to speed on this, you know, work with me collaboratively or whatever the case is. But I think that that would go a long way for the community.
Yeah, that's really good to know. Another thing too, that I think this is still, we're still learning and, you know, our electronic medical records are getting up to speed, as you mm-hmm. said, but the collection of what we call SOGI data. So the data around sexual orientation and gender identity is now something that we are being asked to collect as healthcare mm-hmm. professionals in order to provide the most competent care. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you see that information being asked? Because I feel like there's a way to do it, but then if you don't communicate to the rest of your office and you continuously ask these questions over and over again, it could actually be detrimental and potentially trigger or cause people harm. So I want to be mindful of that and mm-hmm. just want to ask, like, do you think that it's like, let's just ask like the one time and like, that's it? Or what are your thoughts about the collection of that information and the discussion about that information?
I think it's fair. I think even just as a human, I am very sensitive to making sure that I'm using people's pronouns appropriately, right? And I have a little anxiety myself of like, oh man, like, I want to make sure I'm doing this right. And I want to, I don't want to misgender anyone. And so I think that's a really valid question and really important, because it is just central to that building that trust between clinicians and patients. A couple of strategies that I think could be really effective and really simple. I think whether they're actual paper charts anymore or electronic charts or EMR or whatever, just having a designation in there for gender, which most likely already exists, but making that, maybe it's a training for the office staff, or maybe it's education to just incorporate that into the, you know, when you do your weight and your blood pressure and all of those things, just having folks note what someone's pronouns are. But also, I don't think there's any harm in asking, what are your pronouns? You know, that's not offensive at all. I don't, and it may be a challenge to do that every time, every interaction. But I don't think that that's inappropriate. I would shy away from, you know, saying, what do you identify as? I would say, just, what are your pronouns? You know, that's it. It's very, really very, very simple. And I think it goes a long way to making folks feel seen and comfortable with their healthcare providers. And as you know, that can often be a barrier to their outcomes, right? If someone doesn't feel comfortable with the person who is providing care, they're less likely to disclose issues or concerns or ask questions. And it's really about building that rapport. So I would just say, as far as pronouns go, just ask. And if you forget, ask again. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, if I'm going to you for like 15 years and you just you don't remember my pronouns, then maybe that's problematic. But and I think the other thing that gets overlooked when we're talking about pronouns is that if you were to misgender someone accidentally, just apologize and move on. Say, I'm sorry, and move on with it, right? Like, I think there will be instances where each of us will slip up and make a mistake. It's just like any other aspect of our lives. But I think the important thing is to acknowledge it, apologize, and do your absolute best to not do it again.
Amazing. Well, Jocelyn, this has been such a delightful conversation. And I just really want you to know that I feel truly honored every time you ask me to be involved, because I think that knowing you and knowing how far both of us have come professionally in the last, like, what, 7 years-ish?
Yeah, crazy to think, right?
It's been a hot minute. Yeah, that, like, it truly does make me feel so grateful that you continue to ask me to engage, because it means a lot to me, because it means that you feel like I have something that's worthy to be said, but then also that you feel comfortable with me being in the community. You know, as a cis heterosexual woman of color, like, I think sometimes there's this disconnect of, like, you know, what can you bring to the table? And it's like, we've all been marginalized, we've all experienced trauma. Shoot, I wake up Black every day, right? Like, you know, like, it's, I can still be an ally and not have to identify in the community. And it's funny because sometimes people, like, will ask me, or like, I'll mention my husband, and they're like, oh, we just assumed, like,
oh, really?
Yeah. You're also part of the community. And I'm like, oh yeah. So
yeah. And now, no, we need allies too.
Good. Like, it makes me feel really good. So I'm sad that our conversation is coming to an end, but I'm so glad that we could talk about this. It's such a needed conversation. And again, happy Pride Month, and continue your work and your advocacy. And if people want to find you or find out more information about Las Vegas Pride, or read the magazine, or find out about Pride Festival and organizers, and even if they want to contribute to a Pride magazine, I think that's also something to think about as well, because there is health related content that needs to be out there. This is an opportunity for people to consider contributing.
Yes. And just, I would just love to say thank you so much. I have enjoyed working with you for the entire time we've worked together. You're an amazing ally, an amazing advocate. And I don't know if you remember this, but the moment that I knew that you and I were going to work together for a long time was we had like an hour conversation about Henrietta Lacks in my office at Roseman. And we just like kept going and going and going. And I was like, yes, that we are going to be allies. I know we are. But as far as getting involved with Las Vegas Pride and celebrating Pride Month, you can reach us at lasvegaspride.org. That's our main website. Our social media handles are Pride Las Vegas. And we have monthly events. We obviously have our parade and festival in October when it's not quite as hot. That's October 7th and 8th. It aligns with National Coming Out Day and LGBTQ History Month. And yeah, it, you know, whether that's Pride Magazine, our Pride Outside Hike, our Pride Family Bingo, there's a lot of ways to get involved. So definitely reach out, and I can be reached on social media through the Pride Las Vegas handles, or Jocelyn@lasvegaspride.org is my email.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And you are connected with many different Pride organizers all over the country. So I would definitely encourage people to reach out to you so that they can get involved in their own communities. And again,
that's right.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for your time today, Jocelyn. And again, I'm your host, Dr. Christina Madison, and you can find me on your social media du jour at the Public Health Pharmacist. Thank you.
Stay safe, be well, and remember, public health matters.